that they want more scary things. So I don't know where they want this scary thing. Where are they going to get this scary thing? In their bed? Or in the other meeting? Or where they are? Because it's a problem. And you must only remember, understand that when we call the department, this system, fly and save money, call, sometimes even overseas, sit here and pay for the time. It's very expensive. Costly. And you have to be ready for a week. But nevertheless, we're going to start. The team is here, full force. And I hope the secretary has communicated with the department. And because members have specific, they have specific items they want to do. So with that, we did make an introduction last time. I don't know if you want another introduction, but we'll introduce ourselves as we speak. Yeah. And then I will then hand over to the people. We also want to talk with the IDT, independent development track.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members. Good morning. Again, just to recap in terms of introductions, my name is Tembino Damotu. I'm the CEO of the IDT, and I'm accompanied by two executives from the IDT. Mr. Wakaba is the executive responsible for operations and program implementation, and Professor Edith Frith is the executive in my office, who is responsible for strategic planning and the whole reporting system from a corporate governance point of view. I will introduce the presentation, and there are some components that my colleagues will take in the process of presenting. The Honourable Chairperson has indicated that members had specific requirements. I must say that we did not have the privilege given that. So we're actually presenting our corporate plan in totality, but we'll definitely be able to get into the specifics as and when required by members. Honourable members, we will be presenting to yourselves our corporate plan for 2010-12. And this is the plan that is prepared in compliance with Chapter 29 of the Treasury Regulation and Section 52 of the PSMA, which enjoins government departments and public entities to prepare a three-year corporate plan. And the structure does comply with the National Treasury 2008 practice note on the submission of corporate plans. Just from an overview point of view, we thought again we should start from who the IDT is. We had thought that our approach should start from who we are as the IDT, and we thought for oversight purposes it should be important that the committee understands how we function as an organization. The IDT is a development agency that was established in 1990. In 1997, Honourable Members will recall that there was a review of parastatals in government that was forced to democratic elections in 1994. And the IDT was one of those institutions that was being reviewed. The mandate of the IDT was then transformed into a government development agency that will implement projects which are commissioned by government departments. It must cease to be a civil society organization, an independent agency, or a funding agency. I think this is a very important statement, Honourable Members, in the sense that what happened was the establishment of the National Development Agency arose from this statement. But as you recall, the initial mandate of the IDT was to take care of civil society, also to do grant making. That function was then taken to the NDA. There was 100 million rand that the IDT funded the MDA, to establish the MDA, to take some of the deliverables or the mandates that had been set out of the IDC. I think it is very important in the sense that it clearly begins to determine our service delivery model, that we are required to implement departments, which means we are more like a reactive organization, because government departments will have to commission the work that has to be done by the IDC. And also, I think one other important element on that statement is the fact that we don't necessarily serve one department, but we are an organization that cuts across as a service delivery machinery of government. So I think the 1997 review of the IDT's mandate today is what has informed how the IDT functions. We are governed by the Public Finance Management Act, and we are a Schedule 2 public entity. Once more, honorable members, being a Schedule 2 means that we are not online in terms of budget. It means that we fund ourselves from the investments that were done in 1990. Government has given the IDC a 2 billion rand in 1990. Since 1990, the IDC has not been funded. But how we have been able to fund ourselves was to reinvest those funds and to fund our overhead, as well as the money that comes from government departments who assign us to implement on their behalf. So you'd be able to see that from that 2 billion that the IDC had in 1990, actually we proudly say we've been able to roll out more than 12 billion rand worth of programs within that period of time. And that is through the what has been commissioned by government, as well as the reinvestment from the 2 billion that has been given. Our executive authority is the Minister of Public Works. And that is the minister that we report to. The next slide, honourable members, further show us the refinement of the mandate of the IDT. And I think after we were said to be responding to government programs, there were also a number of other assignments that government gave to us. One of those was to support government with the coordination and management of the ISSDP. The ISSDP is the Integrated Sustainable Rural Development Program. And that is the program that was looking into the nodes. Honorable members would recall that there were 13 nodes that were identified, and those were the rural nodes and as well as the urban nodes. So we were required to do that whole program management on that. It's a very interesting discussion, honorable members, that if you want us to take you through, even if it's not today, just in terms of how far we went with the ISRCC and what were some of the impediments that in a way affected the non-effectiveness of the ISRCC. We feel very confident, though, as IDT, that in as far as the mandate of the IDT and what we were required to do, we were able to fulfill that scope that we were assigned to do. In 2006, the president who served appointed the IDT to drive the ASCISA program, and that is the Accelerated Sustainable Shared Growth Initiative of South Africa. And there were quite a number of programs within that program, but the two that were specifically driving was the GISA program, which was the Skills Development Program, as well as the Job for Growth. The Job for Growth is a cooperative type of a program that we were running. Again, these are programs that, if honorable members have got an interest on that one, we can give you the literature and the documentation about those programs, but as well as take you through on those programs. Recently, one of those programs, the Job for Growth, has now been returned by Cabinet back to the IDT, when the IMC, the Interministerial Committee, had decided that program must go to the Department of Agriculture. But Cabinet felt that we can't be establishing another development agency within agriculture when there is an IDT. So it is back to the IDT, but unfortunately it's still an unfunded mandate. We're still interacting with Treasury in terms of the funding of that program. This slide, honorable members, begins to look into how we have ourselves interpreted our mandate. It becomes very important for us to look into what government's priorities are and how we then interpret our mandate in response to those government priorities. And we are saying, in terms of that interpretation, that we feel that we are one institution that supports the social policy agenda. And that is mainly the halving of poverty and unemployment, the creation of decent work and sustainable livelihoods. We do look into measurable improvements in the quality of life
as well as social cohesion. We also want to say that the NDC is established as a redistributive mechanism of government. What does that really mean, being a redistributive mechanism of government? Here, honorable members, we are referring mainly to the fact that there are quite a number of parastatals, as you all are aware, but most of those parastatals contribute towards economic development. It contributes towards creating that economy. The IDC, on the other hand, does the redistribution, because the IDC is servicing what we used to refer to as the second economy, or the poorest of the poor. So it actually looks into the redistribution. It's one organization whose target group is the poorest of the poor. Hence, you will see, as we move on with our presentation, that our focus areas will be in the rural areas, will be on women and almost all the vulnerable groups. And to support all the spheres of government with planning and implementing the national development agenda, with particular reference to the eradication of structural intergenerational poverty, employment creation, sustainable development, and sustainable livelihood. This is also a very important element, honorable members, because we're talking about breaking the cycle of intergenerational poverty, which means in terms of our interventions, we're not just looking into poverty that is here now, but we're looking into breaking that whole cycle of intergenerational poverty. You'll then realize when we present on our program that almost all our programs begins to look into that. I will give a practical example, for instance, in terms of our linkages with the EPWP. What the EPWP is looking into the creation of a job opportunities, we look into how do we complement the EPWP in such a way that we look into sustainable jobs rather than job opportunities. Because job opportunities are short, as you all know, and they are not sustainable. So when we talk about intergenerational poverty, we're talking about sustainable interventions in development. The monitoring and effectiveness of our interventions, we derive or we document and share most of the lessons and models that we have been able to capture as we do our intervention. We're also here showing on the next slide the changing roles and the responsive nature of the IDC. One of the strengths that we think we have is the ability to reinvent ourselves and to be able to make ourselves relevant to the mandate of the day. So we're saying over the 19 years of our existence, the IDC's role in the development sector has shifted from what I said earlier, grant making, into program implementation, development planning and implementation, development integration and coordination, program design, and social facilitation. Our business model, that is how we implement our program. We're saying that our business model is anchored in the IDC's commitment to the eradication of poverty, unemployment, and alienation of majority that are trapped in the cycle of chronic intergenerational poverty. And here we are demonstrating in the next slide what we are saying here in terms of the graphically to say this is how we operate. And as you can see, honorable members, you are really saying there is a target group that quite often does not have the resources, but that is the poorest of the poor. And there are a number of other institutions that have got the resources but are unable to reach the poor. Our role, therefore, as IDC, is to work into that development gap. But we're also acknowledging that in that development gap, it's not only the IDC that operates. There are quite a number of other institutions that operate. So the issue there is for us to be able to maneuver ourselves, to make ourselves relevant within that space. Because when you talk about development, we want to believe that it is that integration, it is that access, creation of that access between those that have resources and those that do not have resources. And that is the space in which we operate. You will therefore see, in terms of our program, that our program continuously would be trying to mitigate that space that we are depicting on that. And that our vision as an organization is to be the leading knowledge-based development agency. Again, honorable members may ask, how knowledge-based a development agency? We say we want to be in the sense that as we implement our program, we need to be able to document those lessons, we need to be able to document those models that we have implemented and therefore lead in the development sector. I continuously make an example of the late Mr. Tatikau, who at some stage requested us to go to the DRC with her. And one of the things that we asked ourselves was, where are the problems that we will be taking to the DRC? Because if we are a development agency, what will make us distinct is the fact that we have models that have been successful. So our vision statement begins to depict that, because it's not just the eradication of poverty, but it is actually the documentation of those models. And that is what we would want to pride ourselves on. The mission statement of the IDT, which I think is very fundamental in the sense that it really talks to the work that we do as an organization. We say that as an IDT, we work with our partners to unlock the potential of those partners. In other words, honorable members, we don't do development for the people that we work with, but we require those people themselves to be part of the development and to bring in the solution. Hence, we realize as we look into our programs that there's a lot of emphasis on training, there's a lot of emphasis on institutional capacity building, there's a lot of emphasis on social facilitation generally in terms of enabling the communities that we work with to participate in the process of development. And that is within the mission statement of the organization. Our core business area is development program management, and you'll see that here we have been able to manage quite a number of programs, diversified programs in this particular deliverable. Harnessing and leveraging resources, and the question might be, how do we do that? But we are saying, as an organization that cuts across various departments, we have the ability to harness and leverage resources, because we can be able to bring resources from different organizations, from different departments towards a particular program that has been focused on. The institutional delivery and capacity building, this refers mainly in us interacting with institutions like municipalities, NGOs, community-based organizations, etc., etc. So we interact with them to build their capacity so that in the process of building that capacity, they are able to access those resources in that gap that I referred to earlier. The knowledge management, I spoke to that, and the social facilitation. We believe at IDT that we should be able to work ourselves out of jobs. If the IDT tomorrow we wake up and there is no poverty, there shouldn't be a reason for the IDT to exist. Hence, the issues of institutional capacity building and capacity building of those communities enables us to gradually exit ourselves. Hence, we talk about intergenerational, breaking the cycle of intergenerational poverty so that we break that cycle of dependency as well, that enables the communities and that we work with to be able to take that responsibility. In terms of the strategic vision of the organization, I will then request my colleague, Professor Edith Fritz, to take us through that. But maybe before she comes in, just to mention that this current strategic the complex plan of the IDT, you will see the shift in terms of us saying we want to deliver our services differently as an organization. And as I said earlier, this is informed by quite a number of processes, including the social policy of government itself, to say how do we then align ourselves so that we remain relevant in this process of implementation.
What we've done here, the team that you have, is a couple of and as the CEO said, I'm one of the executive heads at the IDT, and in particular I'm responsible for strategy development, strategic planning, and corporate performance. So a lot of what the team did was the work that I shared with them. Okay, so we did the presentation according to what is currently the corporate plan of the market. To all of that, but just draw your attention to the main ideas. Pages 3 to 6 of the document is an executive summary, and it starts with saying that the CEO has spoken about how we were established, and therefore in 1997 we were the ruling party and democratic government confirmed the IDT's mandate as a redistributive mechanism when we were appointed as a public entity. And continue to say it was to support our rural eradication of poverty. And we believe that mandate remains unchanged given the depth of poverty in the country. And we just share some development perspectives in the document. And we say that if you look at the history of development agencies globally and why development agencies were established, they were established mainly to drive innovation and transformation. A lot of development agencies in other parts of the world were to drive economic transformation. If the government wants to address a challenge, but it can't do it, it starts with a very hard to turn the bureaucracy around, it would be an established development agency to do so. Then we also say, so that's the one thing, and if we look at our track record, the IDC has over the years driven such innovation and transformation, and you can talk to some of them. Then he says, our understanding is that development is about achieving a full set of aspirations. If we must ask all men and all women in this room, what is important to you? You will all say different things. And therefore, if we want to achieve sustainable development, we must be able to address all of that. It doesn't mean that the IDC must do all of that, but we must be able to bring that. This is what we will do in that whole sector, but we must be able to know who the partners are that we can bring in. So that if we re-exit the community, there's a different result that has been attained. And we also saying that since 1994, poverty has been at the top of government social policy agenda. However, I think government would be the first to admit that it made huge investments in our social policy objectives, but we have not achieved the results that we should. And therefore, in 2007, with the State of the Nation, there was an announcement that there will be a comprehensive long-term anti-poverty strategy. It is still in draft form, and we are hoping we are expecting that it will be tabled soon. Now, the essence of IDC's 2010-2050 strategic vision says, we will firstly say there is a difference between seasonal poverty, incidental poverty, and chronic poverty. Chronic poverty is that poverty that manifests itself in that household, the one generation after the other, and it doesn't go away. And so honorable members of them say, but in the community or the villages of my constituency, I can tell you how that is. We say that public officials often talk about the Millennium Development Goals as a measure for how we're doing with the eradication of poverty. But the Millennium Development Goals are very minimalist because it only tries to eradicate people living in extreme poverty, and it defines extreme poverty as people who live on less than $1 a day. Then if you give the poor who we know in the country $1 a day, that doesn't mean they are not going to be poor any longer. But that goes back to the definition of development. But it is that distinction that we are beginning to make. And so we say we are an established development agency. We were established as a redistributive mechanism. We have national presence, we have reach, and we can add value in that whole living chain that government will establish in terms of implementing a long-term comprehensive strategy. I think I've talked about the few things on top there. Then we say this strategy of ours embodies a number of principles. Firstly, it says it will be grounded in the aspiration and the indicators for well-being that the poor express themselves. We are not going to eradicate poverty if we desire it in this room or in our boardroom in Pretoria. Because we actually have to know how people experience and define their poverty. And therefore we also say it's in people's aspirations, not necessarily people's weaknesses. Because we believe that even in poor communities there are threats. Secondly, people's participation, which cannot be topped down. And we are very excited when we hear our government saying we will we will not stop listening to and talking about people, because that is how we continue to get people participation. We say that we will strengthen our social facilitation and social media mobilization role. The CEO has spoken about that, and then about the partnership with the complementary mandate. I spoke about the value of chairs, and I said, when you look at development, we are not going to do everything, but there will be institutions who will be responsible. And that we will, right now, we are, for the past 3 years, we delivered in excess of 1 billion rand worth of programs, government programs. And we say we will continue to do that, but we will not deliver programs. This is the majority of those programs are the building or construction of social infrastructure, albeit that we use labor-intensive methodologies. It will not just be about the school and the clinic and important as that is, but it will also be, that will be the entry into a community where we will do these other things that we are talking. So we, in wanting to do that, we have said we've got three strategic objectives. And Chair, I'll talk to those strategic objectives now. But I think last week, if we were to depict very, very technical IEP in a picture, it's not the best picture chairperson, but it's attempting to be the you know, ingredient pot that we use. And under it there's a fire, and we say, that pot is going to be kept boiling. And we as IEP, the energy for that will be provided by our social facilitation and mobilization of the people in the spaces that we work will keep the fire going. Inside of the pot, the biggest ingredient there are the aspirations and the assets of communities. And we will add to that our knowledge and our resources and our experience and that of others, because in terms of that drawing that we showed you of the development gap, we cannot do it alone. And if we see that as the right fire, the right sentence, the right consistency, out of that will come these sustainable development solutions that is relevant to a particular area. Therefore, we've got to stop our mission and matter, mobilizing slogan that says, together we will eradicate intergenerational poverty. That is really this. If we get all of the other things that in the corporate plan, that is what we say. I'm not going to talk too much about the other areas. As chairperson, we talk in page 17, because we have to prepare our corporate plan according to the treasury guidelines. So page 7 to 17, we talk about the development sector, and the CEO started talking about that. Then we talk about the situational analysis. I talked a little bit about the NDGs, about the anti-poverty strategy. I defined the chronic poverty. And we in fact, we're going to look at international best practices. If members might remember, I think it's in 207 states of the nation when the president said, we have, as the women supported by some government agencies, went to go and look at Chile and Tunisia, which are two countries that have not only achieved but exceeded the Millennium Development Goals. And we went and said, what is it that they do differently in those countries? And the few things that they had in common was this long-term social policy. And they had a targeted approach. It says that you can't attack everybody in the same way. But this household is more poor than this household. And there are criteria by which people are measured, and there's an intervention that is designed for particular households. You have to intervene at household level. And they've also had a woman focus there, the people providing the service, initially it was the municipalities. In Vietnam, it was the Vietnamese women's movement Then he was contact with a woman, the most sensible woman in the family. So the thing about there's a definition of poverty to be targeted at women very specifically. That means those things that inform how our approach as well. But it's about this long-term integrated strategy. I'm not going to talk to this chair, but in the overview, we talk about the shift that the IEC has undertaken. And the CEO spoke about this earlier, and in those pages, you'll be able to find more good business detail around it if members want to know a little bit more about it. Now, let's say, in terms of our strategic vision, that why we taking on a long-term vision is the best practices that says it is only in places where children who have benefited from those anti-poverty strategies from the time they were in utero, through all their life, through the early childhood education, their school, etc., when they come to 15, 17, are they making different life choices to children of a previous generation? So it's only after a generation that you are able to see, do people decide to leave school or continue with the school? Do women decide they will get treatment or take care of their bodies and their sexuality or whatever? And therefore we say it is only after 15 years you begin to see the patterns of change, and after 20 years we can say, what have we learned when we can fundamentally shift? So we say in 15 years time, we will be able to report. We stand up as a fully fledged arm of delivering the anti-poverty strategy, that we are the agency that designs and pilots innovative approaches, that we will evaluate, document, and package models, and that the country would have fundamentally transformed the face of poverty, and as the CEO said, there's no further need for development agencies focusing exclusively on the eradication of poverty. In the medium term, we will be developing and testing those systems that we will need for innovation, and you'll see a change in our portfolio. Right now, 95% of our program portfolio is social infrastructure. We believe that in the next cycle, that will reduce. And I've spoken to that, and so we will shift our delivery model so that we will begin to take, we'll be more selective about what we do, and take on more community-based programs. Because we believe our clients is no longer just a government department, but communities we serve as a program will come out of that. And we'll start with the really quite excited about the different things that will come out of that. And for now, we see this period of that corporate plan covers as a short-term period, and this year is really year one of the 2010 strategic vision. And so we are planning to execute a turnaround strategy. So I'll share the corporate plan now with the targets that members asked for the long time, the last time. But to notice, we can't transform an organization from doing social infrastructure and government programs to that in a year. It needs to be a more thoughtful and measured process. That those will be the three roles. We'll see this not just program, we will have to do advocacy. We will have to, as a series of ground what we talk about in the research and the documentation of people's voices, but we must begin to change the policy. And that we must also document and share. And the next few pages speak about the key components. I'm not going to speak to all of that. There will be some more depth around how we will do it and what are the elements in it. We thought that there are two key focus areas, like I said, the advocacy and the program. And you see that there's a range of programs that we're talking about. There's the public mandated social infrastructure. There's the community mandated infrastructure. and saying we know somebody who did research in some kind of informal settlements around Johannesburg. And one of the things that she asked the women of those households, what is it that you would like to see happen in this community? And you think that people who live in an informal settlement would say we like houses. But the mother said, we want talks about children. So that would be an example of community mandated social infrastructure. Then community-based investment mobilization, which is, remember the gap that the CEO showed earlier, if this is where the community wants to be, then how do we assist them in getting the resources for that? There's a different process. Catalytic programs, an example of catalytic programs would be, we know that education, the Department of Education, Social Development and Health, all have some responsibility for early childhood education. I think social development is responsible from 0 till 3. Health is responsible from 4, the grade R and grade 0. I mean education. And health is responsible for ensuring that health standards are met in all of them. Now we are working on putting together a portfolio, a proposal, so we can go to those departments and say, we will make sure that all the, we can make it possible for all of the rural areas in our country to have these early learning as child facilities that is well resourced, so that those children who are coming up will have a better chance and don't grow up in terms of the intellectual poverty that many of our children do, but we can make you look good by spending your money. So that would be an example of a catalytic program, which we would like to experience. International and technical support. We believe that we have as much to learn from the international development community as we have to teach. We think of strategic interventions, like the MUD schools that the minister reported on last week. We initiated that. It was the IDC's money that started that program. And then there will be shareholder directed programs. So just a range of things, the menu might change. We put together that law into a interesting table that our board put together and said, see, that is the menu of programs. Here is a change program. This is the level of effort that you're putting into it now that you'd like to see in it. That is the level of budget, and that in 5 years or 10 years you must achieve that. But in terms of the direction which they gave us in how we should be changing it, we just put that in. That was very easy to see. I'm sorry, it's probably easy to see in the hard copy. But when we as the management team have to take the board table, if we have to implement what you say, we think there are three streams of work, and so we are making meaning of it. This is a different set of information here. If you just go to the scorecard, Chairperson, because I know that's something which, and I won't go to the whole scorecard, but this is to reassure members that there are targets. And so,
Chairperson, can you see that?
Yes, I do.
Yes, I
make text of it. Okay, so then you can use that. Chairperson, our first strategic objective there is to obtain sustainable livelihoods through people-centered development intervention. Okay? So we have three key result areas in that strategic objective. The first one is empowered community. And we say our key performance area is sustainable livelihoods. And that the outcome measure for us, there are three, because one of the shifts that we went through about 2004, to say, we can't just deliver development output, schools, clinics, etc. We must deliver outcomes. These things must impact on people's lives. So these measures in our corporate plan of the last number of years, you'll see this distinction say, that is the outcome that we're working towards, but the outcome you only need to see in about 3 to 5 years. But the short-term output that will contribute towards that is these things. So the outcome measure is community participation that we want to achieve. And so we're saying, in order, the output measure is we will have community-based and driven development plan. We have a methodology, an LAP, local area planning methodology, which we have done in different municipalities. That is actually a methodology for the public participation of the IDCs that's done at municipal level. And some of our reports are regarding KZN. Our regional office every year, municipalities have to hand in by the 1st of June their IDPs. DPRG then does a rating of them. And there's a particular municipalities in that were rated number 5, which is absolutely the worst you can get in an IDP. We worked with those two municipalities for a year, for 2 years. And the one thing that introduced was the local area plan. And after that intervention, a year later, they moved from a 5 IDP grading to a 3 IDP grading. Which was the first time they were able to demonstrate the public participation process in their IDP. And it means that this is a process, chairperson, we said, we want to know what people's aspirations are. We believe that this LAP will be like that. And then we say, the next output that we will have is that we will have community-mandated development projects will be initiated. Now, first we will do these plans in one municipality in each one per province. Now, members might say, only one. That is, but if you think of all of the wards in a municipality, and there are some wards that have up to 50 wards, you know. So that you work in a place where it is reasonable, and we think that from that, we do want these plans to be endorsed by communities, and then we want to have the project must be initiated. Do members have a copy of this? Because this is a hard copy of the document that you have of this one. Then you see, look at footnote 3. We define what we mean by initiated. We said at the bottom there, assumption 3 at the bottom here, it says, a project will be deemed initiated when a community governance structure is in place, when the baseline study and principle and purpose of engagement is formally endorsed by the community, when you have, there will be, okay, this is what we have found, this is where we want to go, and do you agree with that? The community itself must agree to that. And thirdly, are formally endorsed. And we say, while this process of community-based development will commence in targeted communities in each of the provinces, experience suggests that this process will involve differently and realistically agreements can only be continued in 3 communities. We can't sit here and dictate and say, we will have projects going in 9 communities. Because we all know that the pace is different in different communities. The third one then is, if we're going to have people for sustainable development, if sustainable development is going to be in such projects, people must be trained. And therefore that pillar or the core business area that the CEO spoke about capacity building. So we have a target there for people trained in and geared for participation in community-based programs, and a target that is 5% of our budget will go for that. And then equitable participation. And our target here is representative participation of women and youth as per the demographics of communities. we could say, well, we know that women are 42% and youth are 8%, but we're talking that we want to be, the chat of Africa does have that that information available for municipality. Let's just share, if you go to the next page, we then say the next component of that strategic objective is the first KRA was empowered communities. The second one is a responsive local government. Now I see we cannot take responsibility for making local government more responsive. That isn't our mandate. But what we will do is we will, those LAPs that we would have done with the communities, we would have, before we go to communities, we would get, we usually get the cooperation that we, the council DC is almost authorizing us to do the LAP. When we have done the LAP, it must come back to the council, they must adopt the LAP. Part of that LAP is also going to ask, what are your perceptions and your expectations of services in this community? What is it that you expect of your government in this community? And then we will establish a baseline of community perceptions of service delivery. And all that we can do is to share that with the municipality. We can't say we're going to change that. However, we have started a municipal support program, and if members want to know more, one of my colleagues, Ayanna, would be able to talk to that. So I think that would be so that there is a responsive local government to respond to the communities where you work. And finally, in strategic objective one, we said we cannot do it alone. So our KRA is resource mobilization. We will have diverse strategic partnerships. And so we will do resource mobilization and we'll conclude agreements and we said how many we will do, that we'll have 20% of our money that we have put into our poverty eradication program, we would have leveraged the equivalent of that in resources. Now that might not always be money, because people might bring on their time that costs money. They might give us space in a particular locality from which we can work. The square meterage of that place where we work or a free school happens, that can be translated into a value. And that we'll have at least one agreement per province. Chair, I'm not going to go through all of the, but I'm just going to give an indication of, and to assure members that we have done the other issues there in our corporate, I think we had a few slides there just on our expenditure trend. These slides we showed last week, chairperson, because we thought that the committee would be interested in that, and I'm not going to go over it again. When we said we looked at the social, the plan of action for the social cluster, we said here are some of the the state of the nation priority areas. This is what the social cluster will be doing, and they have demonstrated in these slides how we just showing the alignment between what we have planned for and then what we are doing and what we will intensify with the social policy priorities, particularly as they have been articulated in the State of the Nation address. The rest of the corporate plan from page 26 to page 77 contains the information on our governance structures, our financial plan. I think it's important to note that we are not part of Public Works and Budget Works. The IT does not get any money from Public Works as and the risk management plan, the fraud prevention plan, our materiality framework, and then the shareholder compact, which is entered into obviously the executive authority and the council authority. Then there are other supporting documents from page 45 to page 56 and some appendices. So we are really submitting, chairperson, that our corporate plan complies with treasury process. those guidelines. And it's actually quite proud of the fact that even though we concluded this in August last year, what we set out to do has relevance for how the social policy objectives are right now.
Interested in the knowledge that we are talking about here. You know, often there's a depiction of knowledge based in a modern context or an urban context. And if you look at the photographs in our country, poor people and poverty-stricken people are residing in rural areas. And I'm not so sure is that the same knowledge that we are talking about in identifying and really representing those people in rural areas. And also when it then comes to speaking to the IGC staff with placing it, I'd like to also come to an understanding. The only IGC building I know is situated in Sandton. And I think maybe it might have moved, but when I come to also talking to rural based areas in the region, I'd like to understand where you base, because in the constituencies, in the constituencies we come from, I can tell you coming out of the Eastern Cape, the people there in Ward 20 of King Sabah Society don't even know what IGC is, you know. So how do you even begin bridging that gap to be in touch with those communities? In speaking into a community-based program, how do you reach out to those communities? And how do those communities themselves begin accessing ICT. You know, speaking of people who are poverty stricken and are very limited as far as their education background is concerned. So to even begin putting up these structures, because I was seeing in the presentation, you need to have some sense of a structure in place there. When these people are not learned to even start formulating a structure for themselves, how do you bridge that gap to ensure that at least they are able to interact with yourself at that level of ensuring that they even begin to have a basis of gaining your attention, because you need to have already a company such a place. So really my question is posed into IDT and operating in the rural context. I understand when you're talking to municipalities and their IDPs, but those IDPs most of the time are centered on urban development. So if you're talking of KFPs within Chata, you can do it as well as everything, but it doesn't really per se speak to the world in the rural areas themselves. So my question then is emanating from those people in that world who want to do something for themselves, who want to engage ICT and get information. How do you reach out to them? Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, my name is Dinesh Matamba. But let me also start by saying thanks for the presentation. I think it's really an eye opener. But I just want to just five questions that are clear and straightforward, which I want to know. You said you are operating with different departments. I think it is even good for us to know which departments, other departments that you're working with. And you said you don't get money from the department. I just want to know, are you still operating from the 2 billion you talk about, and do you still have that 2 billion? The other one that is so interesting, the CEO spoke about, is the independence of people, which to me means that as he said that by tomorrow if they wake up and people are without poverty. I just want to know, so far, you know, how much did you eradicate poverty? Because I'm just looking at the Department of Social Services. They are trying every year to increase the number of children from 14 to 18. So, and that's something that actually people should be independent. We should see by that the government is trying to take away giving hands to the people. The people are actually now operating and being self-dependent. The other one that I want to know is the chronic poverty that the lady spoke about. I'm interested in the practical interventions. What are the practical interventions you are doing to ensure that chronic poverty is eradicated out of them? And I mean, South Africa is so big. I just want to know which areas are you presently easy doing those things, so that we can know in this area IDT is there, is making sure that chronic poverty is there. Because we can't be in all South Africa, we can only target it and guarantee. Let's start here, there is too much poverty, let's do something. The other one that I want to know is, sir, you spoke about the one of the mandates, the other mandate is the artificial mandate, and it is about this. But when I look at this, your target, there is absolutely nothing saying about this, how many people are you going to train and all those things. And maybe I've missed something, I don't know, but I just want to know why this are not on your target here, but if it is then where you target people to train.
I am Lennox Fila from the BDA. In your presentation, I continue to conversation with you. You say you were given 9 months out of your own son, but I don't hear any mention about infrastructure deficits done on behalf of the government, especially in the former Transcaucasus, we have offices, and which is not funded by you, which is funded by the government, which you have managed. One thought we would get into this, because it's funded by the government, you are managing on behalf of the government. And also the Department of Affairs has I thought you at least mentioned it, because they are with millions in the funded by the government, managed by yourself, and also in the rural areas. Thank you.
Firstly, I would also thank you for taking your time and coming and expanding your presentation. I think I would more ask questions on the basis of my experience of being involved in the Student Public Works Program, where I became myself highly involved. In the presentation, it is referred to that you do facilitation. Yes, where I was involved, I mean, we saw the involvement of the IBC. But, you know, one remains skeptical in terms of after the you know, you were party to a memorandum of understanding, did not continue to keep on checking whether the program you put in place is actually implemented to its latter. I can safely say that the targeted beneficiaries in the presentation talks about women and youth. That was not checked after you were party to the memorandum of understanding one. Let me put it, Rustenberg, into the external public works program. In 2004, to be precise, there were training that took place, facilitated by the IBC. Surely, those people are still unemployed up to today. For me, if one talks about the deliverables, we are talking about the intervention which says that at the end, this will be the result. Yes, people are sitting at home with the paper called the certificate. But how do you translate that into a proper eradication? You know, I'm talking from experience. I'm talking 2004, 2005, 2006, 2006. Even today, let me put it, the leadership in its totalitarian form, where IBC is part. IBC had to abandon its responsibility and leave it to the municipality. When you go into the municipality, Madam Chair, you'll forgive me to mention this one. I think it won't go well with some of the honorable members in here. When you leave it to the municipality, in the case of Rustenburg, where there is a fight of positions, the third program that you intended to bring in for poverty alleviation, it is defeated. It is defeated because when this group unseated this group, this group wants to do away with this group's legacy or programs that they've adopted. We are stuck with a leadership in Rustenburg. Honorable Chairperson, these are true. You can go and do your investigation. These are true. A leadership that started 2004. Up to today, it is not yet done, and it was meant for 2 years. IBT is in there. Now, we need to be practical when we talk about this thing. Eradication of poverty, you cannot replace it with a piece of a certificate which says we're able to train so many women, we're able to train so many youth, but in a practical sense, those people are unemployable. The ones that were trained last year is the ones that were roped in 2005. I'm talking 2008, but they were called in 2000. They came in and do a work for 3 months. But because of the poor facilitation, or the squabbles and the fights of assisting or sitting and so on, in the municipality, the program of training was on hold because you had to remove this director, bring another director who told this lie, remove this official because this official does not tell the lie, you must again remove the municipal manager because the municipal manager, those things. Now I'm trying to say to you, the Honorable Presenter, facilitation program. You know, in the municipality level, how do you ensure that it is not replaced by documentation, it is replaced by, you know, real measurables, real deliverables. Let me pause there, Mr. Chairman and Chair.
That we do believe that we have committed
to assist the government, but they are basing that cabinet decision. Well, they implemented this decision in the government. But also, with your respect, some of us know your project in our area in Aleppo. It cannot be only in Amtata, really, as it sounds, but I can confess some roles that was reached by OICT in rewarding after the rural area. But I wanted to check that how are we going to monitor you as this committee? I didn't even want to tell you that I'm from the ruling, but what the committee of parliament that is looking for the delivery, irrespective of postal parties. Immediately that we will be sometimes crazy about our postal parties in a community will be politicizing it delivery instead of looking at it. I'm not saying that's wrong, that we must be proud. I'm proud that was being voted by 11.4 million of ANC, but when in my committee, I want to share with other members of this committee, irrespective of what celebration, that's why I want to just a united committee. Forget about our differences during the election, trying to get a mandate, what the president is saying, and how are we going together implement that. So I'm worried, the one thing that I'm worried about is that all the parties in this committee, they do have a councillor, what councillor, respective of the majority or the minority. But I wanted to check your scope of assisting out of this maybe 3 years of government. How do you assist us as this committee telling us a breakdown reporting that when assistant municipalities in ABC, whenever we're opening our mouth, we say there's no capacity in municipalities. And then we do have an agent like yourself. Can you have something written telling us what is your role in that area of incapacity in the municipality? In writing for me, in order that we must have an informed thing that we have gone so far, but we are going to say, but we still left to do everything. So, in a way, I'm saying that we have got problems in municipality, not only in the municipality, provincial government, national government. We do have this lack of experience and capacity, but we always municipality doesn't have capacity. But I'm saying we have this money that I cannot even challenge you when I was looking at your breakdown, that most of your money is for the consultant. 50% of I don't know what is 50% of your budget. I cannot say no, but if you were a government entity and if the government were giving you that, I was going to check what capacity are you building in order that you must lessen this consultant. The huge amount that we are taking out for consultants. And if even yourself in this agent of yours, you don't give us leadership in yourself in order that you must lessen in order that you must assist at least about this poverty. You must elevate this poverty. We are not against being rural women and men, that we do have men and women in this parliament that are learners. Don't doubt about it. But we are also thinking that those rural people, youth, women, disabled, they need this capacity that with your money, not only with government money to take, give them the capacity, then as some other members are asked that. So the problem that I'm thinking that I'm having, where do you account? What is our role in the government? Immediately that we don't have anything to give to you. You run your own program, but maybe we are feeling that
we need more of your programs that each must be led in the community. In order that we must benefit with those programs of yours or input on your programs. We don't know whether you can take our input because we don't contribute. It's your own baby. That's the main one. And the first question, can you implement the 1997 decision of the cabinet? But I do appreciate, I do know other programs that in my province called Eastern Cape that we have done so much, but not enough. I'm worried about your consulting facilities. I'm not too worried about your salary. People don't give ideas, they do it for being a worker. But with a consultancy, you can take that money channel to this municipality, train them, but I don't know. I cannot say you must not have a service. You will go to the first person, after you said in housing, you will be getting that. Most of the municipalities, there are no engineers. Just because oh my father, when you're saying that, how can you build houses any longer next to the street shore? Where was the engineer then, if it was that? It's problematic. If you can take those problems that you are encountering in the government, assist with your plan correctly, maybe when you hear me from us, but we know that we are on the ground. Those things you must really use your intervention. This board is very clear that officials intervene here, taking the learners, the services, taking them to officials. We must see that, we must get information. What have you been doing since this year? Thank you so much. I'm sorry, I've come very late. I can be out of order, but I'm thinking that the common situation is you will be corrected and leaded by the presenter and the chairman and the committee at large.
Thank you. Thank you. You are not out of order. I record you out of order. So I think the presenters, they know who is going to answer what they want to
answer. Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe I will start. But by starting, Chair, I'm going to request Mr. Wakaba, if we have the slide on programs over there, just to take through what type of programs we implement. We thought, Chairperson, maybe we should just focus more on the corporate plan rather than the deliverables, which is quite a huge document if we were to go through it. But we'll just give you a synopsis of what type of programs we work in and the regions where we are operating. While he's preparing for that, Chairperson, I will address some of the questions that have been put forward. Firstly, Mama, to start with, did we implement the government's decision of 1997? Yes, remember, the corporate plan of the IDC, as it is now, is actually guided by the social policy of government. And we said that we started with our presentation to say one of our strengths has been the ability to reinvent ourselves and to make ourselves relevant to the social policies of government. So yes, the decision of 1997 was adopted, and that decision was really moving the IDC from what it was in 1990, which it was a grant-making organization. It was not necessarily an implementing agent of government, but it was doing the grant. It was looking into civil society. If one has to be blunt, it was like, this is money, go and work in the budget sense at that stage. Hence the IDC placed the toilets in the cell, if you remember very well. That was unplanned, but that was the infrastructure that has to go in there. It did not necessarily look into what the people themselves are requiring, but it was just a service that was provided. In 1994, when the democratic government came into place, there was a commission that was put in place, honorable members will recall. And that commission then had a report in 1997. It is that report that reviewed the mandate of the IDC. And it specifically said the IDC will deliver government programs that are commissioned by departments. I did say, honorable member, when I started with my presentation, that made the IDT to be reactive. because you have to be commissioned in order to react, to be able to respond to that. And I think, as the Honorable Member also earlier referred to, the programs that government commissioned us, government gives us the budget to implement those projects. We have spoken about the infrastructure projects, for instance, where the Department of Education gives us money to implement schools. How that works is that when a department realizes that they don't have adequate capacity to roll out what they require, they then come to the IBT as an implementing agent. Hence, that paragraph, Honorable Member, talks to the IBT as a government agency, hence we are reporting to yourself, because we are established under the Schedule 2 entity. The difference with the Schedule 2 entity, which I explained earlier, is that we are not online, we are not on budget. But we are funding ourselves from that 2 billion rand. We invest that 2 billion rand, and from the interest that we earn, we fund the overhead of that. But also government gives us money to implement direct projects. So most of the schools, the clinics, the multi-purpose centers that we do, and some of the social programs that we implement, mostly government has given us money to do that. Where does then the money from the IDT go to? The IDT money goes mainly into poverty eradication type of projects. That is where the social facilitation that we spoke about comes in. That is where the knowledge management, the modeling of the research modeling and implementation comes in. The program management itself, because our earlier model was that we were not charging departments for implementing their programs. So if they say we should go and build a hospital or build a school, there is no charge that the IDT was charging. In other words, the IDT's overhead was actually, in a way, indirectly subsidizing that. We have changed that mode of operation. As I said, this is a shifted corporate strategy. Because Treasury itself was saying that way of doing, that implementation process distorts the accountability processes of Treasury. What Treasury does give the Department of Education Program Management funds. But when they ask IDT to implement, they don't transfer the program management fund, which means they remain in their coffers. So sometimes you find that the rollovers are actually artificial rollovers. It's saving because the IDT has put its own money. And that begins to distort the accountability process of the treasury itself. Hence, we have shifted that mode of operation to say the partners that we implement infrastructure for will have to pay for that program management. Also, so that the IDT is sustainable itself. So that decision was implemented. Honorable members also asked the utilization of consultants in the process of delivery of the IDT. I think it's also an important element that you are putting forward. But our service delivery model, how we implement, we have realized that with the limited resources that we have as IDT, we can't sit with this expert in our establishment because we can't afford them. They are very expensive, one. Secondly, they are very scarce. We compete. So we have to buy the consultants as and when there's a project we want to deploy them into. Honorable members were also aware that there is a gazette where gazetted consultant fees are being put in. So when you have to go and build a school, right now we're building courts, which are very big infrastructure, raising up to half a billion, some of them that we're building. You definitely need highly specialized engineers that IDT cannot afford to put into the IDT will not be able to put into our salary cost or absorb others. We can't afford those consultants. So our model of operating in any infrastructure implementation, honorable members, you will find the level of consultants will be high because you buy these people. Hence the gazette. The gazette says, for instance, you can't pay X percentage, more than X percentage of consultancy fees. If you can be maybe a Marion Roberts, which has got the capacity to have a whole structure of engineers, possibly your consultancy fees will go down. But we can't afford that. It's more expensive to try and employ them and keep them because you must pay their salaries. Whether the projects they are implementing or not, you have to pay those salaries. So it is a model of implementation that you will continuously see in our infrastructure development that the consultants might be asked. But also my colleagues have just pulled up the standard cost categories in terms of our budget as an organization to show you where the percentages are. In terms of salaries, that is where we sit, 48.9, and maybe to explain that again, IDT, we sell knowledge. The social facilitation that we talk about is people that we must pay and they must be on the field. When we talk about training, it's people that we must pay and they must be on the field. There is no other product that we send apart from the knowledge and the expertise of the professionals that you have. On consultancy fees, we're sitting on 13%, that's 13.1%. Travel and accommodation, that's 9.7%, and all that, as you can see, honorable members. But I think what is critical in this slide as well, honorable members, is that we are directly accountable to you. You are the oversight that must be able to say to us we are out of line or we are not out of line. So it is very important that you interact with the IDT. And if there is anything that you feel is out of line, it is your responsibility, honorable member, to call us to order. So at no stage should you feel that because we are not online, you are not going to be able to interact with us as an organization. Actually, honorable members, I thought in the conclusion, I will mention that even that 2 billion that we had in 1990, we're not depleting that. Because for 18 years, we have not been funded and we've been using that and we're depleting that. We're coming back to Parliament to say, what are you saying about IDT? The existence of the IDT depends on IDT having resources. And therefore, we're talking about the business case and the recapitalization of the IDT. So I think that I just want to make it clear that if we fall within the authority of the honorable members in this committee. The other question that honorable member Mguni was referring to in terms of the Rustenburg incident, I think Madam Chair would appreciate if we can get the specifics of the program. But I just want to clear up the principle. On the EPWP, the involvement of the IDP with EPWP when it started was only institutional capacity building. Building the capacity of the department to be able to roll out the EPWP. We were not involved directly in the implementation. Remember, EPWP is short-term jobs. We don't necessarily look into short-term jobs. We look into sustainable jobs. EPWP is work opportunities. Where a department or a municipality will ask IDT for training, we organize the training. It becomes a once-off intervention to say you come here, possibly you train the social facilitator or you've got learnership on that, we come in and train. But the actual implementation of the EPWP, particularly EPWP 1, was only institutional capacity building, enabling the institutions to roll out the EPWP, which I think, honorable members, we did successfully very well. So unless here there's a specific case that the honorable member would want to highlight to us, Madam Chair, we will take that and just investigate what happened. But I can assure you, honorable member, it is not the IDC that has that responsibility. The math school and the IDC, yes, again, my colleague here will talk more on the math school, which was an initiative that we had experienced while going into the rural area, that most of the schools, particularly the schools that were math structures, there were those heavy rains. There were those heavy rains, and most of the schools or the areas where we were servicing, those schools were just falling apart. We then went into our executive authority, which is the Minister of Public Works then, and said this we think is a problem because we're unable even ourselves to service those communities if they don't have these facilities. Government at that stage had not budgeted for the math schools. We did the analysis of how many math schools do we have and how much money is required, and we came up with about 2.1 billion, if I'm not mistaken. And we put that to training. But we said, whilst waiting for that response from government, we need to kickstart the program with our own resources. The board then gave us about 150 million rand, and we started prioritizing those schools. Honorable members will recall that there's a school in Nyande. Each and every January, what is it, Daniel? There was a picture, the state of South African schools. The state of South African schools. Every January, that school will be there. Honorable members, you have not seen that in this year, because that problem is completely dealt with. So that is where the interventions are. And one of the challenges that we had there was even the reach. There's no contractor that wants to go and work in Denver. There are no roads. Bringing material there is expensive, so the cost itself is high. There are no social facilitators that want to go there because there's no transport to go there. There's no access in terms of roads. There are quite a number of problems. And I would very much appreciate Honorable Chairperson at some stage that we actually take members to the projects where we've done. We don't boast to say we have eradicated all the problems that South Africa has. But what we can assure you is that when we have touched a community, you can see the IDP was there. And we'd like you to experience that as well and go to those projects where we have been successful. The funded government schools, my colleague will take us through what are the portfolios that we have. When we talk about a current turnover of 2.1 billion in this current financial year, it is not IDP's money, it's money that departments are transferring to us to contract, and we have all that information. By the way, Honorable Members, IDP is one of the few institutions that for 6 years we've had unqualified audit reports. So from an accountability point of view and from a corporate governance point of view, we really pride ourselves that we've been able to account back to government. We've not been able to roll over money, nor to have mishaps within that. And we feel that that is just one thing that puts us as an organization, as a credible organization. The next question was at GIFSA's mandate, why is the GIFSA program not there? Honorable members, the GIFSA program was an unfunded mandate when the IDP put it over. We were requested by the president to kickstart that program. We were not given any funding to fund that. What we did, we went to Kellogg Foundation, we went to private sector, we put a little bit of money from the IDP to kickstart the program. The statistics that you've been seeing being reported from the GIFSA program, no one did any work apart from the IDP. Those placements of students, the reintegration of students that were placed, all that was done. We were the implementing agent of that. When we then submitted for funding with Treasury, and that funding went into the line function department, our board took a decision to say we will not be able to continue with the program because we don't have the finances for it. We are told that finance went to the Department of Labor and to which department is it?
And to the
Job
for Growth went to
GTI. And the Job for Growth went to GTI. But now Cabinet has brought back to us the Job for Growth. But Cabinet has realized that among all the institutions that are implementing for government, it's only the IDC that can be able to drive those programs. But for GIFSA, it is in the HRC strategy, which is the higher learning education. So it has moved to that. But we will support them with all the background information that relates to that delivery. The chronic poverty intervention, what type of intervention? I think as my colleague has said, but we can also take that it is. How far have we eradicated poverty? I think you have also spoken to this, you can repeat that. How do we fund ourselves? I've explained that, Madam Chair, in terms of how we fund ourselves. And the operating with different departments, I think I've also touched on that. The accessibility of resources in terms of your questions. My colleague here is actually from the Eastern Cape. He also works in the municipalities, and I think he can account better if he's in the municipalities. But I know very well if we talk about King Sabata, the regional municipality, if you have not felt us, then he will account to me. But I'm sure I'll give him to respond to that honorable member. I think colleagues can
speak. I'm not saying it's fault now. Mm-hmm. If you can give us information, a breakdown, which are those schools, when we went to the school, where exactly, in order that sometimes you must know how did you characterize those first day and those weeks, and after that 917 that your still have your promise and you finished those days last week and which area in order that we must do a follow-up and maybe in another meeting wanted to know how did you characterize this. That's because we still have money you know that, but after 917, you need to have it. And if not, how are you going to account to us about that 2 million, which was specifically for all education, that is what happened?
Yes. You also want to follow up? Yes, no, I concur with that presenter that IDT has built a desk student desk since actually from 1990. But basically the dependency on consultants is a problem. And you are supposed to be, those consultants are supposed to be transferring skills to our people. And that has never happened. But if that has happened, wouldn't have been this problem that we are, the shortage of skills. So what I would like to know, what monitoring strategies do you have? And Chairperson, remember, unfortunately I know I'm from inside the construction industry. Secondly, also the artisan. There's a normal paper that you give to the contractor and say, we want you to employ so many women, so many youth, so many artisans. Is there any monitoring system that you have? Unfortunately, you do not have one. Let us be clear with that one. And if you can just upgrade that, because we're in a major problem of shortage of skills. We're dependent on contractors. And IDT has been doing all the contracting, especially in the Eastern States. All the schools, clinics, hospitals have been done by IDT. And also with the emerging contractors, most of your emerging contractors are in grade 1 to 3. There are none of them who are in grade 9. That is what they have been doing, work for IDT. So I think if you can just upgrade on those. We have a major problem, and the IDT was supposed to get us. We know that you employ the consultants, but you do not monitor them to transfer the skills, because we do not have any consultants. We have shortage of skills. That is just what I want to say. Thank you.
Okay.
Do
you want to...
The Honourable Member wanted us to finish off this thing, which are very short questions. Firstly, Honourable Member, the prioritisation of math schools. We don't prioritise the math schools. It's the Department of Education that does. And the reason for that is that once the school has been built, you need a teacher, you need stationery, you need books. We can build a school without those facilities and without the prioritisation of the Department of Education, that school will stand up without teachers. So that prioritization we don't do. We will say this is where a problem is. There are X number of math schools. Tell us which in this area what have you budgeted for. And on that basis of that prioritization, we then go and build that school. But the Jalisa of that school that I referred to, it was already there. But the math school had collapsed. So those are the schools that we went to first, because the budget from education was already there. So we didn't need to be mobilizing the budget for education in terms of teachers. So that is the process of prioritization, Honourable Member. The transferring of skills by the consultant, I think, Honourable Member, you're correct.
Before you finish, the member also asked that the other 60...
He's going to respond to that. He has got a slide on that, Honourable Member. The terms of reference for the consultant does not include the transferring of skills. But remember, the time they take on the project, it costs money. Now, what we have done as IDT in terms of that skills, of that capacitation, with the Minister of Public Works, was to bring Cubans. We have got Cuban professionals with us, which are highly qualified engineers.
There is a model, I don't know if you have that slide, which is a very nice sheet, that slide of the impacting of skills and how we are monitoring that. Because we realize that we are unable to break that slide with the consultant. Their terms of reference does not have skills training. If you put skills training there, there would be a budget for that. They are going to cost you for that, because that is going to take time and it's going to delay their implementation process. And that is just how technical the whole industry is. And therefore, these are some of the things that we are unable to come out. But we have now have a solution. And we think within a period of 3 years, we should be able to demonstrate, to say, this is the capacity building that we have, that was built in the process. The Honourable Member was saying we don't have the monitoring mechanism at any. Actually, I think we've got the best monitoring mechanism, where you can sit here and touch a button and see a school that is being constructed at that particular point in time, and our whole value chain. And if Honourable Members have a time, would want to come and demonstrate that system to you, and my colleague again can talk to that. But in terms of our monitoring, with the equipment that we have now,
I don't want to dialogue, I'm just going to
take time.
The people that are coming here are already waiting. Okay, so I think you can go further, because the other thing that we definitely going to do now is to meet after this one point is going to do. One is going to see if we can go to this place. So what was the other of program?
This is like present over the 7 year period to actually 8 year period, the portfolio that IDC has managed. You can see the growth from 2001 from 440 million to 1.5 million in 2008-9. This slide presents performance over the years, and you can see that the first column turnover is the program that we manage, and the column expenditure is the expenditure that we deliver in that particular year. Again, you can see the growth in the capacity to deliver in programs for government, sitting at 1.3 billion in the last financial year. The same presentation has been done graphically. This column shows where the IDC program comes. In other words, in these provinces are working on a combative basis. As you can see, in the largely highly populated and poor provinces, we're doing more than in the less populated. You can see in the Western province, you can see the same thing. We delivered 808 million, which constituted 9% of our program. And you can see in KZN, we delivered, let's say, 2%. The other graphical presentation is just to show the in the pie chart, the slide is broken down into the various provinces. This slide, the earlier slide was the program portfolio, this slide is the expenditure portfolio. This slide is very, very relevant in terms of the question what department we work with. I think this slide breaks down our work into programs. And I think from the programs we can then infer the various departments that we deliver. You can see that the bulk of our program is in the school building program, 55%, which means that the Department of Education works with us more than other departments. If you look at this slide, you will see that it's followed by the Department of Justice, 15%, which is the cost and the maximum offices that we do in the National Department of Justice, followed by welfare support facilities at 12%, which includes the community facilities as well as the health. So we're working with education, with justice, with social development, and other departments of the I think it's important to just keep briefly to this slide. I think my colleague spoke extensively about it. This is our target in terms of the focus of the organization in the past. Currently, the focus of the organization is 90% on public mandated programs. Public mandate refers to those programs which we do for government. In other words, where we act as a program implementing committee. And the target of the organization is to increase the effort that we place on community development such that the public management focus on the PA context. And I think this last slide is actually going to increase in terms of focus. But then we said that when we started the math school, it was in 2007. When we started the math school, it was an IDT initiative. The IDT was initiated, financed by 150 approved by the board. At the time, the concept was to focus on drugs. The concept was to replace math classrooms by STEM classrooms. And we engaged with the various provinces, Department of Education and Public Health. That's why we see a number of provinces were saying, hang on, if you would rather follow a comprehensive school approach, or actually our need is not just a classroom, but an abolition facility for school, also for your facility. So the numbers that you are referring there, I think were the initial numbers that were constructed 50 classes at the school. I think we even had a planning of 5 classes at the school, which would change completely as we went with the school. Many other provinces even came to the party where we would build, for example, in the home form, the Bangala school, which was launched by the then president at this on the 16th of April.
So just saying to our chairperson that what you wanted to explain really was our proposal that it must be documented and then emailed to the commission to the in order that we not all get it.
Thank you.